I don't come as an authority on the subject of feminization of poverty, but I come having lived in some of the major cities in this country in a very intentional way. So I am going to give you a lot of statistics today because I think they're frightening, but I also think that the people here probably can put faces and names and people to those statistics. So I think it's helpful for us to hear them and to demystify them, because it is not just a black problem or a Hispanic problem or a white problem. It is a problem that we share, all of us together. This is only the second group where I've done where men have been invited. I have spent most of last week doing lots of women's only workshops, and it's fun because I think when we come to things like feminization of poverty, AIDS, and some of the other things I will be doing this week, we need all the help we can get. And this is not just only a women's problem. This is a problem we share, and we have become victim to that particular problem. So it's very appropriate, as we have looked at the rainbow and we have looked at racism, now we are starting to begin to look at some of the manifestations of what that's going to mean and what that in fact does mean. So I've been feeling down today, and I'll probably be feeling down for the next couple of days as I prepare, because I realize it's putting me back in touch with the reality from whence I come, that on the mountaintop we are not seeing too much poverty, because those of us who are poor cannot be here. And so we have separated ourselves from those particular sisters and brothers by being here. Having said that, I'm going to read to you a couple of voices of poverty. They come, they are recent, they are not old. They come from things like the congressional hearing testimonies in 1985. They come from another testimony on working women hearings with the Congress, from the Los Angeles Times, from the Greensboro Times. These are real people. I was asked to tell you what it's like to live in a single-parent home with no money. Sometimes it's sad because I feel different from other kids. For instance, other kids get to go to fun places, and I can't because I don't have enough money, and they do. The other day in school, we had this balloon contest, and it only cost $1, and out of 3 years, I haven't been able to get one. Me and my brother are a little hard on shoes. This summer, the only shoes we had were thongs, and when church time came, the only shoes we had to wear were one pair of church shoes. The one that got them first got to wear them. The one that didn't had to wear a pair of my mom's tennis shoes or my sister's. Sometimes I pray that I won't be poor no more, and sometimes I sit up at night and cry. But it didn't change anything. Crying just helps the hurt and the pain. It doesn't change anything. Mary Gibbs, 80, lives in a trailer park in Fairfield, a small community in northeastern North Carolina. Her monthly income is $334. Prescriptions alone consume $60 to $80 a month. And then there's her hospital bill. She angrily stretches it out until it reaches the floor. It totals $2,646. I hardly can make it, Gibbs says. We're going to have to start eating less around here. You know what really makes me mad? It's all these people saying I'm not poor because I get welfare and all these other so-called benefits. What do they mean I'm not poor? What is poor? If it's not staying home all weekend before the check comes because you don't have the car fare to go anywhere, or that you have to switch your child's dentist because the one you had doesn't want to take Medicaid anymore. I'm poor because every time I see my welfare worker, he tells me I'm poor. I'm poor because now they say I can't even go to school anymore, that I have to take any job I can find, even if it has no future, no hope. It doesn't matter that maybe in some ways I get a little more than I might have gotten years ago. I'm still poor, and they won't let me forget it. For me and my spouse, unemployment has meant the postponement of child raising. We are already over 30, not being able to save money, piling up debts. It means the fear of not having steady employment over the coming years. Without steady employment, we will not be able to get pensions. Without pensions, we will have nothing but Social Security, and it seems doubtful that there will be much of that when we reach retirement age. For us, the decline of quality of life means that our parents' American dream no longer exists. Since 1973, there has been a third increase of the number of poor people in the United States. 20 million Americans suffer from hunger. 15 million who live below the poverty line do not receive food stamps. Over 33 million people live below the U.S. poverty line. 68% are white, 12% of the total white population. 28% are black, 35% of the total black population. 12% are Hispanic, 28% of the Hispanic population. In 1985, 40% of the poor were children under 18, 10% were elderly. 2 out of 3 poor adults is a woman. About 3/4 of those in poverty are women and children. Nearly 40% of all single-parent female households live in poverty. That doesn't mean they don't work. Just to clarify that for those who are coming in a little late. 53% of the Hispanic female-headed households live in poverty, and 52% of black female-headed households. An interesting one for the middle class. A divorced mother's available income dropped 73% in the first year after divorce. The father's available income rises 42%. I'm sure there are women in this room who know that. They didn't need me to read a statistic to them. More than 50% of divorced mothers receive no child support. Few of those who are awarded child support receive the full amount ordered by the court. Poverty takes an American child's life every 53 minutes. This is not South Africa or Central America. This is the United States. Black infant mortality rates are twice as high as white ones. Women are 60% of the population over 65. They are 71% of the elderly poor. Median annual income of elderly women was $5,600, or about $800 above the poverty line. Median income of elderly men is $4,000 more than that of elderly women. Let's look at some statistics on poverty and work. Women in the average earn 63 cents for every dollar men earn. Black women, 58 cents. Hispanic women, 53 cents. We've gone up a little bit in the last couple of years. It used to be 55 cents for the dollar. A person working full-time all year at minimum wage. Somebody asked me that question today. I was glad to find the answer to that. Still haven't found the exact figure for the poverty line today, because it keeps changing. And I'm not sure if it's the same in every state, and I could not find that statistic. But if I remember correct, if my facts are correct, my memory, that a family of four who make the poverty line is 16,500, which means there are a lot of people in the poverty line that we don't even realize. That maybe have been higher, but they never take into consideration cost of living. But this is the statistic for if you made the minimum wage and worked a 40-hour week and worked every week all year, you would make $6,700. 25% below the poverty level for a family of three, says this particular thing. If the mother in two-parent families does not work outside the home, the family is 2.5 times as likely to be poor. You know how often you hear that argument about the women are only working for the extras in two-family homes, that they really don't need to be working, that they're taking jobs away from men? You ever heard that argument? Interesting statistic. 8.5 million Americans looking for work last year were unable to find it. Black unemployment is twice that of white. 40% of young black men are unemployed. I don't know if you know how, some of you probably have more experience than I do. I never know who the audience is, but the way we figure out the employment, the unemployment figures, is based on people who collect unemployment. There are many, many people who are not eligible to collect unemployment, and they're not counted as the unemployed. It's only based on those people who collect the unemployment benefits.
Another thing is that the people who have exhausted their benefits
right. are not counting.
They're tired of looking for, can't find anything, and they just stop going to the office.
Right. So if they say, I'll just quote my city, my new home, if it's 8.5% unemployment, that's not the statistic. I'm hearing 35-38% unemployment in the city of Detroit. Even though if you hear President Reagan's quote, it's somewhere around 8.5. Does that sound right to you, Janet? I think that's about how we're looking at it presently. So I think that's another one of those things we need to be clear about when we use statistics, too, that we know they are often used to support whoever's bias is happening to be. And you certainly know what my bias is, so I will not hide that bias. 65% of the poor are not employable. They're either aged or disabled, or women with children under six. Women with children under six are okay in terms of the AFDC and all the state and federal welfare programs. 2/3 of the 11 million aid to families with dependent children recipients are children. The average AFDC, does everyone know what that is? Aids to Families with Dependent Children is what AFDC stands for. Listen to this one. The average AFDC family is a mother and two children. 50% are white. You could not be led to believe that. You'd be led to believe it was black and Hispanic. But 50% are white. Just a quick look at poverty in the world, because I am really looking at us addressing ourselves in terms of the United States in our rainbow, because that's sort of how we've been focusing this week. But to be aware of the global, because when we look at the global and we think about ourselves as being as rich and wealthy as we are, and we see these statistics, it's kind of mind-blowing. But I don't want to suggest that we are worse or better, but to get the whole perspective, while 1 in 7 Americans is poor, 2/3 of the global population lack adequate income, food, shelter, clothing, or medical care. 3 to 5 million African children die each year from hunger and malnutrition. Remember, we had one child dying every 53 minutes or 58 minutes.
Really, what?
We have a child that a poor child die every 53 minutes in this country. In Africa, there are 3 to 5 million African children die each year.
That's not
a poverty, which could be other things, illness, because when you're poor, you don't get adequate medical help and care. So for sure, I would not make that connection either. Women are half of the world's population, 1/3 of the official labor force, do 2/3 of the world's work, receive only 1/10 of its income, and own less than 1/100 of its property. Let me read that again. We're half the world's population, 1/3 of the official labor force, do 2/3 of the world's work, receive only 1/10 of its income, and own less than 1/100 of its property.
How can you do 2/3 of the work if they're 1/3 of the force?
Because we, that they don't count what we do at home as work. That's supposed to be a joy and fulfillment. I assume. That's an assumption on my part.
Could you read that one?
I sure will. Let me get it back again. Women are 1/2 the world's population, 1/3 of the official labor force. I think that word official says, okay, do 2/3 of the world's work, receive only 1/10 of its income, and own less than 1/100 of its property. I had a good statistic I wanted to show you in terms of the United States. I'll probably find it.
Do you have numbers on the number of teenagers that are in poverty situation, unwed teenage mothers?
Yeah, I think, just let me look here a minute. Not a number, but, the only thing that I have here is the teen mothers are twice as likely to be poor as non-teen mothers, which I guess is a subject. I don't have, a statistic that I would quote. There's come out a Women's Agenda for Economic Justice. It's a working paper that a group of women have worked on in terms of suggestions for action. I think, you know, it's real easy for us to sit here and share and know and agree and believe that what I've just told you is probably true because of your own life experience. Is that a correct assumption? Is there anyone who would disagree or feel that we're inclined
to believe
mm-hmm.
how they're
articulated
really makes
a
difference?
Mm-hmm. Depending on the reading, okay, for good or ill, yeah. Well, my concern is that it's just like raising our conscience about anything, as we raised our conscience about South Africa last week, or we raised our consciousness about what it means to be a woman, the other women's issues last week, that the frustration is then how to go beyond that. And then somebody will ask us, well, what do you really want? You know, we get that in the church a lot. Oh, what do you women really want? And so I think it's important that we address ourselves to that and to give some thought. And so I was particularly pleased that this group of women who it comes from something called the Women's Agenda for Economic Justice. And I just sort of underlined some of their rationale and then suggestions that I thought were particularly relevant to the kind of people that I've seen here at Holden, who could be able to, could relate to that or could see that, yes, like more things done in the community. In the first, I would love to have found one of you who's willing to run for president, and I would leave my job and help you get elected. But I'm not sure that is where we would put all of our energies at this point, but there are other places we can make our voices heard. And so their rationale is good, and I also think it's in terms of looking at our rainbow and what has happened with racism and the implications for that. For those of you who were with Joe Bart both last night and this morning, I mean, women have really got their more than their just rewards on this particular issue. We have carried the burden, and so I think that it's helpful to address it in this context. Women who work outside the home face an exhausting double day as they continue to be primarily responsible for housework and child rearing. It's been wonderful to meet couples here, these last 2 weeks who do share parenting, and but I happen to think that's probably the exception to the rule, but it's nice to begin to see that. Child care is inaccessible and unaffordable to most women. Women who work within the home are penalized in terms of access to credit and social security income, and often are dependent on men for their overall economic security. A large underground economy of pornography and prostitution exploits women for profit, particularly teenage women and children. Many women face environmental and job hazards in their communities and in the workplace, which affect reproductive health. Women are forced to rely on private health care system, which does not address their concerns, particularly in the areas of reproduction and birth control. Women of color are subjected to sterilization abuse in disproportionate numbers. Corporate and public programs based on outdated models of family structure deny income security to many, especially older women, displaced homemakers, and lesbians. Women are subject to sexual harassment on the job and in their communities. Women also face problems which are not unique to women: unemployment, lack of control over government, corporate investment decisions, and high prices on such necessities as food, fuel, health care, and housing. Another personal aside for me, when I went to Detroit and I went looking for, I did not own a car in California. I had a political position about owning a car and using fuel. So I get to Detroit, the city of cars, and ask for the public to look at the public transportation. And there is this, what I call affectionately, the rinky-dink people mover that runs just around the center of the city. Not even the center of the city. I mean, it's, you know, a mile and a quarter, isn't it? Something like that.
It goes nowhere.
It goes nowhere. It goes from my house to for me to go down and eat in Greektown, but that's about it.
The population in Detroit.
I don't know.
Yeah, large. So I asked, I said, well, how do, and we know it's a poor city, you know, and it's, and I, so I raised the question about what do poor people do to go to work? I mean, to me, it's like mind-boggling. And they say they get on the freeway and the cars break down at rush hour. Well, it was hardly a solution to the problem. But I just, it really hit me how important transportation is. After coming from where I didn't have to deal with that, from other cities I've lived in, it's really hitting up to me why, another reason why women in poverty, I mean, if a woman even wanted to be a domestic in a fancy house in the outskirts of Detroit, she could not get there. I mean, it just would be impossible. So that's a reality when I read this about the whole business of transportation. It really is a problem. And then when you don't make enough to even make it worth going out, I can understand why people get into those positions. Okay, some of the suggestions. Well, maybe I should ask you for some of your suggestions of how we can begin as we sit in our particular places to begin to deal with the poverty that we find women in and our friends.
I think housing is one of the biggest ones. I live in Detroit also, and I've been trying to help a young lady find adequate housing for her and her baby. And she's not aid for dependent kids. And they allow her $145 a month to live on. I mean, for rent. Now, I don't know where you live at, what $145 would get. But in Detroit, the only place you could fly for her was like Holland Park, which is a city within the city of Detroit. Four-family flat is full of mice and roaches. And the plumbing is bad. There's no running water in the kitchen. And the toilet is broken in the bathroom. And social service is paying it. And I cannot find anything better. And it's based on how many kids you have. So now she had two or three more babies, and she could get enough money to get a decent place, which is crazy. But that's the way the system is
paid. That's how the system is.
And we need to do something about getting adequate housing.
The Women's Economic Agenda suggests that we increase the state standard of need by 15% for AFDC recipients and develop a plan for permanently indexing the standard of need, which is what, and Detroit's an inexpensive city for this. I mean, there are other cities where you could not find. And they won't give you money if there's a man in the house, and then that's one of the ways women deal with being able to pay the rent is to get a live-in man.
What about child care?
The only way you can get child care is if you avoid the school, or that you get a job, and if you get a job, you only keep the first third of what you earn, and then the rest goes back to the state.
I was director of the YWCA in San Francisco, and we had a child care center, and it cost people $400 to leave their children. I thought, you know, how? I mean, and this was, you know, the YWCA's imperative is to eliminate racism at every place. But, I mean, you know, really believe in this stuff. And, you know, and then we paid the workers so little that they wouldn't even be able to afford to put their children in a child care. So, you know, we end up, you know, not both provide the child care or the child care workers are some of the lowest paid women in our system.
We opened a new development center in our church in Sale, and I'll show you how far behind I am at times. And so someone was inquiring about how much it would cost to have a center child there. And I said, oh, probably in the 50s. And I think it's actually sponsored by the government, too. And so I thought, oh, 50 is 75,000, probably. So I went over and I asked, and she said, $225 a month. I said,
I think that the child care crisis is the women's issue that women can most get together and get around to change, and we've been wiped out with this present administration. I mean, there's been no. Because Nancy doesn't need it, so, you know, the rest of us don't either.
I don't know how many of the women can be going to that country, but they really do have a good system of taking care of children. The child care centers are beautiful. They really are. And I think I think the government could start or develop something like that.
I think the main thing is education. I just read a great article by a woman who found herself poor with a child, and with welfare workers insisted she get a minimum wage, get any job, which was necessarily a minimum wage job. Then her children would have no one to take care of them. It was just a catch-22. And she had somebody who encouraged her to get a school loan, go through the system to get a loan to go back to school, not to has a PhD, and she's helping other women realize that they can get education so they can get better jobs. And I've been in that situation. Luckily, I have a husband that keeps me from being poverty level, but I have found myself with minimum wage type potentials, and you just have to know that you can get a school loan or something. You can get that. And a lot of women don't realize.
Yeah, but you have to have food on the table too.
Yeah.
And transportation and child care.
The other thing is everybody is not schooled.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to face it. Everybody, they don't have it. You know, they may have vocational type skills, but to go to school and be able to get a degree, a lot.
Right, but the problem is their welfare workers insist that they get a job right now. And so that's an unskilled labor type. So the women are working together to insist that they be allowed to get other training.
I just got laid off in gym, and my unemployment lasts for 6 months. And I can take some kind of training program for the 6 months. But what kind of training is going to give me the money to make a gym?
General Motors.
Okay. I was making $35,000 a year. That's good money. I mean, 4 years in college, people don't make that kind of money. And I've got 12 years of work there. Seniority.
I work on the assembly line, which means I'm absolutely trained and qualified to do nothing on the job market. I have no marketable skills. Right. Yet and still I had perfect attendance and I did my job well. Now I learned something this time because I laid it laid off once before. I have no charges. Mm-hmm. But a minimum wage job won't do me any good because I'll lose everything I got.
Right. And that's why people are trying to change the welfare system so the law will allow people to get retrained when they come to work.
Welfare system is not going to be helping.
Yeah, they're not going to let you go on for it.
I can't get on welfare.
No, she can't get on welfare.
Not unless I'm going to give it to my home, get rid of my
She'd
car.
Have to give up all of her assets that she's worked so hard on.
Which is not fair because that I worked for, you know, wasn't given to me. I made $35,000 because I work 6 days a week. I work sometimes 10 and 11 hours a day.
So you're saying you wouldn't be... You don't see a need to reschool yourself?
I see a need, but I don't know what direction to go for. I can't be trained in 6 months to do something.
No, but you can have a backup support system to be trained long enough to get your $35,000 a year after you're used to. There are, that's a few different article measurements there.
Okay, we'll go up and look at the article in the magazine, Janet. We'll get you in that program
right.
When we get back, okay? Okay, let's work on it. Okay, Mary.
I want to say, too, because, and this is partly from experience, although I haven't,
go ahead. Take as long as you need.
You know, there's a lot of good ideas about how to get out of poverty and how to better yourself. But when I started out with my young child, and started facing child care versus getting a job. I chose to get a weekend job and then take care of him during the week because I was really worried about shunting him off somewhere. And it was really, really hard to make it. And I found what happened to me was a gradual deterioration of my feelings of self-worth and all the strength that I felt, you know, I used to have, and the isolation felt, you know, and because I couldn't afford certain things, I get really depressed, I feel I'm not supplying the things that I'd like, you know, to have, and I really spun a web of going deeper and deeper, which I think is real. I mean, I feel like I can just go there and not afford it, and I have some single parent friends also have experienced really difficult.
It's real hard to get out of that cycle.
One, I heard somewhere, I think here, in one of the workshops about provisions for refugees who came from other countries, that they have basically a lot of their needs met for like a certain period.
And that's going to cause a lot of stuff.
So that they can get out of that circle. And it seems like that would be really worthwhile for a country to put money into getting people out of that circle.
I agree. Watch for legislation on that kind of stuff, too.
Something I've worked with homeless people for a while, and the biggest thing I noticed, the most essential thing for people, first of all, they need an address.
Mm-hmm.
And without an address, you have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to hire you? Mm-hmm. Where can you get your money from? That's the most frustrating thing I think that people found in the game. I can't get anything without that address.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't
Salvation Army great job at trying, but
they always do a great job. They do that which some of the rest of us can do, but there are millions of people out there.
Yeah.
Just really,
I'm thinking of them as a training ground for some of the rest of us.
Yeah, oh yes, absolutely. Oh, I hear you. Yes,
well,
absolutely.
What do you think about problem with child care, we see the idea that legislation for supporting child care centers would help a lot of people, but a lot of women are afraid their kids are going to grow up to be have values that aren't there.
Absolutely.
What's the answer to that?
You thought I had the answer. No, I don't have any.
Put together in my area and have, I forget what they call it, but they trade babies with them.
Mm-hmm, like a collective or a community, something like that. Well, I think that's one of the options, I is to somehow figure out a way where you can share and live together. But you know, that's difficult. But that is certainly is one of the one way you can find women friends that you have compatible and share that with. When I work with teen mothers, we try to get them to buddy up and look for apartments for them to be together. But to try, you know, that's just like getting two siblings together in the same house. We ended up doing more counseling with those young women with these little babies. But you know, you're right. We have to look at new ways. We have to look at new ways to look at family. What is family? Isn't family, isn't that a family? Three women and two children and even a male cousin or whatever. You know, how can we look at new ways?
And his co-teenage mother is a pregnant, and they're going to keep their babies. And as soon as the baby is born, they will go to the YWK, and they have a program whereby they teach these mothers how to care for the babies.
Mm-hmm.
Some, even during that pregnancy, I think it goes down during that pregnancy.
Well, yeah, we need certainly get sooner than that in terms of the health care.
Yeah.
I think that's why we're losing so many children.
And then after that, they try to get care for these children. So these girls will go back to high school. Or if they have graduated, they train for 25 years now. And it has been a very successful program at home. It started by Dr. Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, these two brothers, they don't even know how to dress their children.
I'm going to try and keep the discussion away from Keith because I think that's another whole issue. And that's what I put down. I just think that I'd like us to keep the discussion. Like Mary, that's real. Those are unique, and we need to be sure and help not be in a position of judgment, but to help get the health care and the skills that are needed. But this issue is right here in this room, and how can we address it?
I see an opportunity for all of us as part of our congregation to become advocates. I'm Washington State Advocate of the Lutheran Church, not of LCU, and I get information across my desk all the time about current bills that are before in the state of Washington, they're before the legislature, things that need 200,000 signatures, for instance, that are upcoming in a few months. And part of my job with my congregation is to educate them by making sure they get as much material on as possible. And it seems really generalized, and you don't ever get to see any end results, and it's very frustrating sometimes. But it's up to us women to get the legislation passed. It's up to us to educate other people so that when the legislation is there, they pay attention. These bills with all their numbers are so confusing to everybody. And so one lady came up to me and she says, well, I can remember 516. I'm supposed to vote yes on it. She couldn't even keep it straight. She said she didn't, wasn't even going to try. All mm-hmm. she knew that she was going to be one person who was going to vote for my bill. And she took my word for it. But
that doesn't take care of the immediate.
It doesn't take care of immediate. It
doesn't take care of Janet's friend
no,
who you can't
doesn't.
Find the apartment for.
But it is at least the education
but we need
of
to
the population is a place to start. On a smaller, much smaller, on a very limited basis, we have a program in Spokane called Share Home.
Hmm.
And it's through the Spokane Christian Coalition. And there are several. It's almost all volunteers. And the whole Spokane Christian Coalition is run by volunteers. And they have records. You are screened, both the person that has the home and the person that needs a home. And one particular case that I was involved in, the only one I know personally, that it worked out very well, It was an older person who was told that she could no longer stay in her home because her family was worried about her. She took in her college student who had a small child who was poverty, below poverty level. They met several times before the arrangements were made. They were both screened very carefully, so if we knew it was all right for the child to be around the older woman, that it was all right for the young woman to be in that household, and that the child understood what the boundaries were. And it does work.
That's great.
It does work. And I don't know how many, I have no statistics with me, how many times this does work. I'm sure there are times when it doesn't work, but it's a beginning.
Sure, that's an excellent suggestion. Child, back to child care. Are there people who live in communities where child care is built into like a General Motors? Do they provide child care at General Motors?
Well, but the last few years they just started the child care list of places that was in the area of where we lived at. I work like 26 miles outside of Detroit, and most of the people didn't live in the area that we worked in. They did have a list now that they provide.
Yeah, some communities now are legislating that when new businesses come in that have X number of employees, large numbers of employees, that they also build childcare into where they are, because then the mothers can go down at lunchtime and have bond if the child is sick, the parent is there, mother or father, and so that the responsibility is more of a shared responsibility. And certainly, I think as a parent, that's that, you know, you feel better if your child, and then it's not all this taking them and dropping them and having to get there by 4 to 6, and if you're not there by then, you know, what happens to your child. In San Francisco, in the city, any new businesses that came in and had buildings that were over 8 stories high, and I can't remember the square footage, but, you know, big corporations, they had to either provide child care in the building or give money for a nonprofit such as a YWCA to provide it for them. And that was thanks to a woman on the city council there. Who really pushed that through and put City Hall, you know, the so I think that's another model to look at. As you know, when you try to start to, I don't want to make it sound so wonderful when we go home and open up our church buildings, because of the world as it is today, and with some people who concerns for children are less than healthy, we have very strict rules and regulations, which I guess I really affirm, because I don't think you want to leave. It must be hard to leave a child. I don't have a child free, but it must be very hard to leave a child. We certainly want to be in a safe, good place. So that's why I think they also, I don't know, I guess every state is different, but the legislation is, but homes can be licensed, but they can only take in 6 children or whatever the numbers are. People cannot do it as privately as the Aunt Janes and the grandmas can't take in, you know, all the neighbor kids like we used to do. Somehow we have to be able to, I guess, think creatively and not be stymied by those things, because we can get really discouraged by it fast. That's for sure. What other kinds of things we can look at? Does anybody had any experience with job sharing? I have friends who have taken one teaching job and shared it so that they could have the income and still do the parenting. That's another.
In our teaching situation, more and more of those people are coming in. But they're ticklish because the 2 people have to be really, mm-hmm. the benefit of the children and teaching has to be really matched up as well.
I always thought that would be ideal because there are so many teachers nearing retirement that would like to cut down on the number of hours that they teach. If there was some way, I mean, it seemed to me it'd always be of great advantage in the high schools, for instance, to have, if you had 2 teachers on half time, each of them teaching, say, 3 periods, that's, the school gets more than 1 teacher out of that, gets 1 extra period out of that.
Yeah, the school gets it, yeah.
They get more than 2 half-time teachers.
Yes.
Yeah, but the problem comes in with the pension and medical insurance and things like that, but I don't see why we can't, why that can't be worked out. It's just like they shut down and say, well, this is too much of a problem, we can't do it.
I also understand that that sort of a situation is creeping into nursing too, that's been discussed among nurses, if that could be done.
Yeah, I would think that would be good.
Has anybody heard of physicians, like women physicians in the group? They have a good practice, and it's split one.
Oh.
And, you know, mm-hmm. so that they're only working part-time, where normally they would be all their physicians, they're going to work full-time, but they're in a group home for the group. Have you heard that? But that yeah. stuff is
share of practice, like two women. The one who spoke to retire, like, she was like, too late.
So that isn't, that is not, because that's something that I know I thought about, but I'm just not sure if they're not out there, if there's something I can do, or if they have to work hard to make it.
Go ahead, and then I'm going to. I think we should talk somewhat of some of the health issues around the feminization of poverty that was coming up.
I just want to bring up something a little bit off the subject, but along the same lines, it's really hard sometimes to know where to go for the resources. And I think you might find quite a bit of different resources connected to your schools on the community college and university level.
Mm-hmm.
I know in our part of the state we have a very growing displaced homemakers program. And part of the displaced homemakers program is that they have free counseling. And this counseling is like psychotherapy, but it's mm-hmm. also counseling on where to go for a lawyer, if you're having trouble with welfare people, if you're having trouble with your landlord, how to get into school, where to go for money for school, and they're just an unending source for women on all different levels of problems. So that's just one resource that we might check.
Are there any rural women in the room? I realize I'm so urban that I could be. Not small town, really rural. I think about what must be going on for women in the rural communities with the droughts and they're so isolated. You know, I mean, I'm wondering resources.
I'm from that community.
Oh, I'm just curious as to what are the issues that are arising for women and there. I mean, we have, you know, community colleges. As soon as you said, I think about, well, yeah, we have those in cities. But I'm wondering what the rural woman does.